today. SB1 is up in flames as Republicans hold the line to kill the anti-election security bill. Does the Biden administration and intelligence agencies think you're a domestic terrorist? Probably. And why did Moderna have a vaccine candidate ready to rock in December of 2019? Yeah. All this and more on this week's edition of World News Brief. And welcome to this week's edition of World News Brief on the CGMRadio.com network. I'm your host, Winston R. Holland. Delighted to be with you as always, and even more delighted perhaps than normal, because the first bill that the House of Representatives pumped out of Congress as quick as possible after the Biden regime took power is the disastrous H.R. 1 that was essentially going to federalize the elections. It really should have been called for the Communists Act, for the Democrat Politicians Act, because election integrity would have been basically illegal. But it is really fascinating. So what happened today, yesterday, what happened is that the Republicans held the line. They actually did their job, and the Senate bill failed. It wasn't even allowed to advance to go forward to debate. Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema held the line on the filibuster, and the bill was essentially dead before it started. But it is amazing when politicians will actually say the quiet parts out loud. The stuff that you're not supposed to say, they simply cannot help but admit. And what am I referring to? I am referring, of course, to New York Representative Jamal Bowman, who said this on Inside Politics on the network, not so watch so much more anymore, CNN.
2022. If we don't, and we show the inability to deliver, then we risk losing power and risk this moment in American history to really push a progressive democratic agenda.
Oh, wait a minute. Can I hear that one more time? What was that you said, Representative Bowman?
The same conversations need to happen when it comes to S1. The same relationships need to be used that the president has built over the course of his career to make sure we pass S1. Again, the American people have sent us here to deliver. If we deliver, we maintain power in 2022. If we don't, and we show the inability to deliver, then we risk losing power and risk this moment in American history to really push a progressive democratic agenda.
That's exactly what we've been saying all along. that was the purpose of this. It is truly amazing. A bill that is ostensibly nonpartisan. It's ostensibly just to help certain people be able to vote who cannot vote, to help the underprivileged, those who are unable to walk down to the DMV and get a voter ID card to get a driver's license, because according to the left, if you have a certain amount of melanin in your skin, they believe that you're too stupid and have too little of the ability to walk down the street and get an identification card. Therefore, they have to essentially make voter ID in states like Texas illegal. He said it as plain as possible day. This was reported at the Gateway Pundit, and it's up at CGM.news. A link to this article is there. He said it plain as day that we could risk losing power and that this bill was not about voting rights. It was about maintaining power. And there's a great piece from Breitbart that actually goes into this. Senate blocks Democrats' election power grab bill. Senate Republicans blocked a signature Democrat election bill that would radically transform America's electoral system and grant the federal government more control over the country's elections. The Senate voted 50-50, failing to meet the 60-vote threshold needed to advance the debate on S1, the For the People Act. This prevents the Senate from voting on the legislation. The legislation would federalize America's electoral system, which has drawn strong opposition from Republicans. Among other things, the legislation would federalized control over congressional elections. And it's important to, and I brought this up and I wanted to share this with you. It's a document. It's, you know, some consider this document outdated, but there are others who kind of like it. This document, do you know what men had to go through? Men and their families had to go through for this document to even exist at all? Probably a little bit more than you and I. You or I had to. This document is the United States Constitution. And in Article 1, Section 4, it says this. It says, the times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. The times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. In other words, the legislatures of those states. Now, it does say the Congress, right after that, it says, but the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations, except as to the places of choosing senators. So it's, to be fair, it's not as if the House of Representatives has no ability to alter any type of federal election law, but it's pretty clear that the weight of the responsibility goes to the state legislatures, and what this bill would have done would essentially have just yanked any and all power that they had. It would be ludicrous if you asked the founders, would it be okay to check the identification cards of people that are voting? They would have said yes, and that this would be just an incredible overreach, an incredible power grab. So the Constitution is important, and it's still relevant. But here's what it says. It says it would federalize control of the congressional elections, declare that standard state and local maintenance of election systems, such as purging ineligible voters from voter rolls, limiting vote by mail, requiring voter ID, and establishing rules against felons voting, would erode the right to vote. Yeah, not everybody in the world has the right to vote. Do you guys know that? Do y'all know that not everybody in the world has a right to vote? And there was one more here that I wanted to mention. Well, there's a few others I wanted to mention, but it would also protect illegal immigrants from prosecution if they vote. It would protect illegal immigrants from prosecution if they vote. Okay, if that's the case, let's just open up elections to everybody. I mean, is it not voter suppression that Europeans cannot vote, that Africans cannot vote, that Asians cannot vote, that South Americans cannot vote? Canadians can't vote in our election. And elections, I mean, already, Mexico, they're not allowed to vote in our elections. That is voter suppression. This is madness. It's racism. It's bigotry. How dare we not let anybody and everybody in the world vote in U.S. elections? Giving someone in Iran the right to vote is no different than that right here. Why? Because voting is a privilege given to citizens of that country. I have no right to vote in Iran or Germany or Latvia or wherever. I have no right because I'm not a citizen of that country. And I certainly wouldn't have the right to vote in that country because I was visiting or I decided to go in there illegally and stay for a while. It's unreal. So essentially what they're saying here is that illegal immigrants are allowed to vote. It's incredible. It's incredible. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said ahead of the vote that reactionary state legislatures' election integrity bills amount to voter suppression. Mitch McConnell said on the Senate floor ahead of the vote that the legislation would serve as a Democrat power grab. You know, I don't play Mitch McConnell clips very often on this broadcast, but I'll give him a day. Hey, why not? You know what? He held strong at least on something for us. Go ahead. Later today, take it away, Mitch.
The Senate will vote on whether to advance Democrats' transparently partisan plan to tilt every election in America permanently in their favor. By now.
You know, he's right about that. I mean, that's essentially what Representative Bowman just admitted on that interview with CNN. It was about their power. It's remarkable. Sorry, bitch.
The rotten inner workings of this power grab have been thoroughly exposed to the light. We know that it would shatter a decades-old understanding that campaign finance law should have a bipartisan referee and turn the Federal Election Commission into a partisan majority cudgel for Democrats to wield against their political opponents. We know that it would let Washington bureaucrats direct federal dollars into politicians' campaign accounts, government money for yard signs and attack ads. We know that it would let Democrats take a red pen to election laws in each of the 50 states, neutering popular precautions like voter ID while legalizing shady practices like ballot harvesting across the board. It's a recipe for undermining confidence in our elections, for remaking our entire system of government to suit the preferences of one far end of the political spectrum.
Senator Ron Johnson said in a statement ahead of the vote, quote, "The For the People Act is another Orwellian named bill that has nothing to do with voting rights, but everything to do with consolidating Democrat control over government and our lives. Republicans want to restore confidence in our elections by making it easy to vote, but hard to cheat. Seems like Democrats primarily want to make it easier to cheat. Why else would they propose eliminating voter ID laws, require ballot harvesting and drop boxes, make the FEC a partisan agency, make it harder to maintain accurate voter files? They would also force taxpayers to help fund the campaigns of candidates they oppose. An accurate name for this monstrosity would be For the Democrat Politicians Act." Marsha Blackburn said the bill would, quote, "perpetuate a Democrat majority and would serve as an incumbent dream." Although the vote was expected to fall short of the 60 votes necessary to clear the cloture rules, Schumer held the vote anyway. Blackburn told Breitbart News that he held the vote to placate Democrats' leftist base. Blackburn said, quote, "This is about positioning for him. In my opinion, he is concerned that he is going to have a primary challenge from AOC. He is watching very closely what is happening on his left flank." Yeah, people like AOC aren't going away anytime soon. But I would say this is a good day in American history. Now, what's going to happen from here, at least in part, is they are going to continue to pressure Manchin and Sinema on the filibuster. I heard an interview with Congressman Andy Biggs of Arizona yesterday, who is a colleague of Kyrsten Sinema, who is a senator in Arizona. And he's very optimistic that Sinema will hold the line on the filibuster. He said that that has been a position of hers for 20 years, that she is really tough. He has a good relationship with her, and he doesn't think she will budge. That's good news. I like to hear that. But of course, I do not count my chickens until they hatch. Perhaps there's a dozen eggs. The first one hatched today, and I think it is a reason to celebrate and thank God for. Does the Biden administration think you are a domestic terrorist? They probably do. Is the Biden administration much more concerned about you than ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Antifa, the unbelievable invasion at our southern border with the human traffickers and jihadists and all types that are coming through and can come through our southern border easily? The worst criminal gangs and drugs and drug lords. Who do you think the Biden administration thinks is a graver threat? All MS-13, all these horrific, nefarious actors that love to invade America and wreak havoc on us? Or someone who, I don't know, maybe you don't think the 2020 election was all that on the up and up? Maybe you have doubts about the COVID jab? Maybe you, in the mind of the Biden administration and the intelligence apparatuses, maybe you are a bigger threat. Let that sink in for a moment. Don't give way to fear. We're not about giving way to fear on this broadcast. I'm not afraid. To quote Ronald Reagan, I'm not afraid, and I don't think the American people are afraid of what lies ahead, right? No fear. No fear. But this is a truly unprecedented and weighty time in American history. The only thing I think I can really compare it to would be the Civil War. The reason why the Civil War was fought initially was not over slavery. It was fought because the Union, President Lincoln, did not believe that the South had a constitutional right to secede from the Union. They did not have a right to do that, so Lincoln set out to put a stop to it. Of course, I wouldn't call what happened an insurrection back then, but what did happen was secession. They decided to secede from the United States. And in that sense, they could have been viewed as the Southern states could have been viewed as enemies of the United States because they were willing to fight a war in order to be able to separate themselves. But other than that, I can't think of another time in American history when the government of America, the, quote, elected officials of America, and the intelligence agencies that serve those elected officials viewed the common man and woman simply because we think for ourselves, simply because we have some doubts about some things. Or maybe we think the COVID jab is deadly because it is. Or maybe we think the 2020 election was stolen because it was. Are you allowed to think that? See, remember, we could call Donald Trump an illegitimate president, hashtag resist, hashtag not my president, and everything's perfectly fine. No problem with that. Stacey Abrams can run around saying that she actually won the election and that the election was stolen from her. No problem. But if Trump, if his supporters say it, well, then we have problems, ladies and gentlemen. Great article from The Federalist. June 21st, Democrats are turning Homeland Security into a political weapon. When a former FBI assistant director for counterintelligence says directly into a camera that fighting terror may now mean arresting members of Congress, the blood sport of politics has been taken to a new and more dangerous level. Speaking on MSNBC recently, Frank Figliuzzi opined to Chuck Todd that, quote, you know what? I will let this individual speak for himself.
Look, Chris Wray testified publicly on the Hill that what happened on January 6th is domestic terrorism. What have we learned from our experience with international terrorism? In order to address that problem, arresting low-level operatives is merely a speed bump, not a roadblock. In order to really tackle terrorism, and this time domestically, you've got to attack and dismantle the command and control element of a terrorist group. And unfortunately, and I know this is painful to hear, that may mean people sitting in Congress right now, people in and around the former president.
Arresting low-level operatives is merely a speed bump, not a roadblock. In order to really tackle terrorism, and this time domestically, you've got to attack and dismantle the command and control element of the terrorist group. And unfortunately, I know this is painful to hear, that may mean people sitting in Congress right now. People in and around the former president. Ladies and gentlemen, did you know that we might need to round up members of Congress to really tackle terrorism? Now we're going to get into what they think terrorism is. But the article continues, it is the stuff of banana republics when political opponents are locked up. And this was urged not by a fringe activist on an obscure YouTube channel, but by a former high-ranking U.S. intelligence official on the second most watched cable news network with no gasp from the host. Is this what Homeland Security has become? Clearly, much has changed since 9/11, when President George W. Bush instituted a new office to, quote, secure the United States from terrorists' threats of attacks. That eventually became the Department of Homeland Security. With a $40 billion, get this, guys. Did you know? With a $40 billion budget and more than 240,000 employees. Okay, remember, this thing was created in like 2002. 240,000 employees. It is now a behemoth that clips in size only by the Departments of Defense and Veterans Affairs. Although established with noble purpose, there is growing evidence that its focus has evolved in a direction those voting for its creation never imagined. Those with the secret clearances, shiny badges, are increasingly scrutinizing our homeland, not for external attackers, but our own people. In his first address to Congress, President Joe Biden cited white supremacist terrorism as the, quote, most lethal terrorist threat to the homeland today. This scripted message is being driven by other key Biden administration officials, including AG Merrick Garland, who testified to the Senate Appropriations Committee that, quote, domestic violent extremists pose an elevated threat in 2021, and in the FBI's view, the top domestic violent extremist threat we face comes from racially or ethnically motivated violent extremists, specifically those who advocate for the superiority of the white race, end quote. Joining him in that assessment was Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, the primary official charged with protecting our nation from terror. Neither official mentioned the race riots involving Black Lives Matter and Antifa last year that cost a record $2 billion in estimated insurance losses, not to mention all of the deaths that came from those as well, including and mostly of minorities. Nor did they voice concern over the incessant death to America chants from the Middle East, the region that produced the 9/11 attackers. No. Suddenly, whatever Democrats consider, quote, white supremacy, is our number one security threat. And here's what you have to remember. The security that the Biden regime cares about more than any other is their power. And we don't have to go too far back to remember this. Remember when they were shouting from the rooftops that Donald Trump is a threat to our democracy. Donald Trump is a threat to our democracy. And you're sitting there scratching your head going, how is Donald Trump a threat to democracy? Because he ran a campaign and he won an election? Threat to democracy equals threat to power. And again, I want us all to remember, and this will help us to mentally wade these waters. We've got to remember that whatever they say, they mean essentially something different. And I'm sure they know that they mean something different from what they say. But this is what you call a psyop. This is what you call a communist revolution. There's a book that I have on my shelf called Live Not By Lies. And the book talks about how the communists in Russia forced people to say things that were not true in order to break them, in order to get them to submit to their regime. It's part and parcel of a communist revolutionary takeover to... I mean, look, all politicians lie. Nobody denies that. But this is on a whole, this is a propaganda machine on a whole other level. Where, again, it's take the transgender stuff. The insanity of a man that we're just seeing in the news, a man is going to be going to the Olympics in the women's weightlifting. I think the activists and the hypes, they know that's a man. They know it's ridiculous. But they're trying to mentally break us. They know we're going to see those stories. We're going to go crazy. We're going to get upset. And we're eventually, and they're hoping, we throw our hands up and we give up. We have got to view what's going on in America today as a psychological and information warfare. Everything is contradictory. Everything that they say, they actually mean something quite different. And they do that for a couple reasons, to deceive the population and to try to mentally break those. Try to mentally break those who are paying attention and trying to think through these things logically. Don't fall for it. Do not fall for it. But instead, see what it is. Shrug it. Oh, yeah, we know what's going on here. We know they're trying to break us. We know they're trying to just deceive the masses and break us. And it's great. I'll hear even politicians say all the time, it just doesn't make sense. Why do they say this, but then they're doing this? It doesn't make any sense. Why do they say this, but they're doing this? Guys, wake up. Of course it doesn't make any sense. They don't care it doesn't make any sense. They know that it doesn't make any sense. So let's stop pretending like this is not some kind of psychological warfare communist revolution, and that they're actually trying to think logically, but they're just getting it wrong. No, they're not stupid. A lot of the followers are, and maybe some of the activists really are that stupid. But I'm sorry, I've got to give a little bit more. I don't think they're that stupid, all of them, especially the ones pulling the strings. Okay, I should get back to this. The White House just released its National Strategy for Countering Domestic Terrorism, a four-pillared approach to identifying and eliminating domestic violent extremism, DVE. You got that, class? DVE. They want you very familiar with that term. Domestic violent extremism. Despite its stated claim of protecting civil liberties, there are clear risks within. The press release notes that, quote, private sector partners will be used to identify early threats via, quote, credible non-governmental analysis. Who are these partners? We don't know. Perhaps the Southern Poverty Law Center, armed with their list of hate groups that has routinely included well-known Christian organizations such as Family Research Council and the American Family Association for their stance on LGBTQ issues. Remember that? Remember that the dude who walked into the Family Research Council offices in Washington, D.C. to blow them all away. Remember why he did that? In official police testimony, in official police records, he said that it was because he saw the FRC as a hate group listed at the Southern Poverty Law Center. So he went in. Now, fortunately, there was a security guard that was there that stopped him. The security guard suffered injuries of some sort. I'm not sure. I don't think it was too bad. Nobody died. Thank God. But is that who it's going to be? Who are their private sector partners? I'm sure their fact-checking will be done by Facebook and Snopes and PolitiFact and all these leftist groups. But who are these partners? Who are these private sector partners? Is there going to be a balance? Are there going to be, you know, are you going to take the PolitiFact, Snopes, and the Gateway Pundit fact-checking site? I have a feeling not. If they do have some, quote, Republicans involved in this, it'll be just like the, quote, Republicans that are a part of the, quote, Nonpartisan Commission on Presidential Debates, which that whole thing is a sham. You know, I was glad to see that Rona McDaniel came out and said that, you know, this is the Commission on Presidential Debates, it's unfair, it's biased, we might not do any debates unless you fix it. Rona, we've known this forever. We've known this since 2012, when Candy Crawley of CNN stepped in to help Obama out in his debate against Romney. And if that wasn't enough of a clue, the 2016 debates should have been enough of a clue to the RNC that they should have freaking done something about this. But no, they just They just let it go. And now, and of course, I wonder, it makes you wonder if they wanted Trump to lose. But now that in their minds, they probably think in some demented way that Trump is out of the picture and that their golden boy, Mike Pence, will be their guy for 2024. They're like, okay, now let's work to make the debates more fair. Hello. I mean, how does someone like me, who is not in the upper echelons of the Republican National Committee, I've known for years that something has needed to be done, and I was saying it in 2020, just wondering, what in the world is going on? Why is the RNC doing nothing to fix this presidential debate mess? And I think we know. They hate Trump. The RNC hates Trump. That's why we don't need to give them a dang dime of our money. Give it, if you're going to give money to political candidates, give it to specific candidates. Do not send it through the RNC. They are not on the side of the MAGA, America First, pro-Trump constitutionalist movement. They're not on our side. They are not on our side. Where are they? Have any of them even visited the Arizona audit? Has Kevin McCarthy? Has Ronna McDaniel? Has Mitch McConnell? Have any of the GOP elites visited the Arizona audit? I don't think so. They are not on the side of what has become and what is the majority of the Republican Party, so they don't deserve our money. But we know who else is not on our side, of course, and that is Joe Biden. So I wanted to read from this, if you will indulge me for a moment. I wanted to read straight from it, straight from the belly of the beast. The assessment of the domestic violent extremist threat. This is from the document itself put out by Biden this month. And it says this, it's on page 10 of the document. It says, the intelligence community, IC, assesses that domestic violent extremists who are nominated by a range of ideologies and galvanized by recent political and societal events in the United States pose an elevated threat to the homeland in 2021. Enduring DVE motivations, domestic violent extremists, motivations pertaining to biases against minority populations and perceived government overreach will almost certainly continue to drive DVE, radicalization, and mobilization to violence. Newer sociopolitical developments, such as narratives of fraud in the recent general election, the emboldening impact of the violent breach of the U.S. Capitol, conditions related to the COVID-19 pandemic, and conspiracy theories promoting violence will almost certainly spur some DVEs to try to engage in violence this year. So we see what they're concerned about. If you have concern about fraud in the recent election, if you have doubts about everything that's going on regarding to COVID, you are on the radar, ladies and gentlemen, that you could be one that flies off the handle and wants to go into a minority neighborhood and kill a bunch of people. Conspiracy theories promoting violence. What is that? That is doubting the U.S. election. That is doubting that the election of 2020 was nothing but the most perfectly secure election in our history. And that is why, that was the reason that Twitter and Facebook and Amazon and all of these demonic entities, and that's really what they are, I use them, but those who control them are, it's terrible. It's truly terrible. Their pretext for kicking people off those platforms is that if you say that the election was stolen, you're promoting violence, and therefore you should be kicked off the platform. Okay, so the Ayatollah Khamenei had a tweet from 2018 where he called for the destruction of Israel. Okay, so the worst dictators, most brutal, evil dictators in the world are all over those social media platforms. Yeah, okay, I get it. But if you say you think the election was stolen, then you're out. You're out. We see, we know what this is about. And this is about them thinking that we are domestic terrorists. Now, maybe you're listening to this and you don't agree with me on any of those. Okay, well, then they don't view you like that. At least not yet. They're going to start, this is how it goes. I mean, in a communist revolution, the goal is complete and total. There's not freedom of speech in communism. There never has been. There never will be. It is a totalitarian fascist model of government where you have a party and you have an executive, a head of that party. And that's it. There aren't, like, elections. It's just raw power. It's kind of like a monarchy, but instead of a king, there's the party. So that's all I'm going to say about that. We have a problem here in the United States. It's kind of a new problem, at least from what I know. We have a lot. Okay, you're like, okay, Ryan, you're an idiot. Okay, of course we have problems. I know. This particular problem really bothers me, perhaps more than other problems. And it's really kind of unprecedented. And it was brought to my attention again from this great article by John Zmirak up at stream.org. It is linked up at cgm.news. And the title is this. The title is "The Top Domestic Violent Extremist Threat Comes From Attorney General Merrick Garland." The National File reports, as the Biden administration continues its persecution of political dissidents using the vast powers of the national security apparatus, AG Merrick Garland said the, quote, top domestic violent extremist threat comes from those who advocate for the superiority of the white race in a statement regarding domestic terrorism today. First demonize, then terrorize. So Merrick goes on to say, when you want to persecute a political or ethnic group, it helps to demonize it first. The natural law, which God wrote on our hearts, rebels against open persecution of those who are clearly innocent just because they're weak. So if you wish to dispossess, impoverish, imprison, or even kill members of a given group, for whatever reason, you'd better get busy manufacturing proof that they deserve it, that they're carriers of some profound, contagious evil, that they stand as an imminent threat to all that is good and decent. In fact, they're a real and present danger to public order. So the regime must crack down on them before they do harm to others. What he does, Zmirak does us a great service by listing out several examples of history where elites whipped up fear against a certain group that they want to punish as a pretext to crushing groups that they consider their enemies. He starts off, he said, I'm just going to give a few. There's a long list, but he gives a few historical examples. Intolerant integralist Catholics convinced the Paris mob in the 16th century that Huguenot Protestants, a tiny minority, wanted to impose Calvinism on France. That led to massacres like the most infamous one on St. Bartholomew's Day, and a protracted civil religious war that devastated the nation for decades. Intolerant English Protestants in the 17th century convinced the British rabble that Catholics, a tiny minority, wanted to impose their faith on England. This led to riots, lynchings, and legal persecution aimed at Catholics. Radical mobs in Paris during the French Revolution targeted any foreigner, priest, or nun as an agent of royalists trying to restore the monarchy. They hustled thousands of innocents to the guillotine. The Russian Bolsheviks whipped up their supporters to target, rob, and murder landlords, small business owners, priests, religious Jews, and members of many ethnic minorities. Soon, private property had largely disappeared. Russia went from an exporter of food to a land of famines. The Nazis convinced large numbers of Germans that Jews were intrinsically hostile to Aryan peoples. that they somehow both caused capitalist plutocracy and communist revolution. So they must be stripped of citizenship, labeled with badges, exiled, imprisoned, or killed. Once the fog of war descended, the Holocaust proper could start. The communist Chinese government labeled pious, peaceful Muslim Uyghurs Islamists and terrorists. That was a pretext for subjecting them to forced abortion, imprisoning 3 million of them in concentration camps, and stealing organs from prisoners for sale on the black market. This persecution is still going on. The American left knows its history. Its leaders have studied the practical methods of terror. Patrice Cullors, co-founder of Black Lives Matter, boastfully described herself as a, quote, trained Marxist. Maybe our billion-dollar corporation should have thought about that before they flooded her extremist organization with money they made from us. She can now read Karl Marx in one of her several mansions. But now, after our fraud-ridden 2020 election, the U.S. government itself is taking the first steps toward a persecution. The target? Conservatives and Christians. The pretext? White supremacist attitudes. I haven't gotten to what really bothers me. All of this bothers me. But there's a heading in this article titled, and the heading is the Washington, D.C. Gulag. Typically, we think of gulags in some far-off country, specifically Russia, the old USSR. He references an article on American Greatness, amgreatness.com, which is, this article is linked up at cgm.news as well. Letters from a D.C. jail. Of course, echoing the famous letter from a Birmingham jail that Martin Luther King Jr. penned while in prison, fighting an actual just protest against discrimination and inequality. And it's about the behavior of guards and the inhumane treatment of prisoners. And she quotes one prisoner who managed to send her an email. And it says this, quote, "We are charged with every possible offense and held in the D.C. jail on solitary confinement and treated inhumanely. For example, a correctional officer from a different pod came to C2B screaming at us late at night on June 1st because we had just sang, quote, God bless America from behind our locked doors like we do every night. Being as we are on lockdown 22 hours a day, it's nice to keep morale up through patriotism. When my next door neighbor informed the officer that we were just singing God bless America, the officer responded by yelling F America. After the officer left the pod for several minutes, he came back in through the back door with another guard, walked upstairs and opened cellmates or person down the hall's door to go inside with him. I believe two other guards came up other stairs to stand near his door as well, although I could not see them. I live right next door, so I listened through the vent to the officer threaten him, shut the F up or I will beat your A and F you. And letters from a D.C. jail, there's actually a lot more of this testimony that they go into. And it is heartbreaking, to say the least. And I would encourage you to read them. Another one here says this, "We have no fewer than 5 combat vets out of rec at any one time. The problem is, if the other cell block breaks in and starts a massive brawl, we would get blamed in the media. Many are concerned," in parentheses it says, "many are concerned guards will allow the general population of D.C. prison to mix with January 6 detainees." They go on to say, "We are white. They are not. We are conservative. They are not. They can do whatever they want. We cannot. If they busted in here and caused problems, we would be accused of racism, continued violence, and rioting, and the usual lies and slander." And interestingly, the author of that text is not charged with any violent crimes. Another one here, it says, my son has seen and experienced a very inhumane abuse in that jail. He has also been denied bond at least twice, while others from that day are already home waiting trial. I don't know what to do or where to turn. As his mother, I am heartbroken. The defendant, a former Marine, is accused of stealing a riot shield and used it to break a window. This kid has been in lockup for over 4 months, 23 hours per day. 23 hours per day. Rapists, murderers, actual criminals are treated better than the way these political prisoners are being treated. He has no access to medical, anything fitness related, proper grooming, reasonably edible food choices. He sleeps on a cot with a 1-inch thick mattress. His, quote, rec time is limited to 1 hour per day. Unless the guards have a wild hair up there, then he gets nothing. The defendant, an Army reservist, is not charged with any violent crime. This is why John Zmirak labeled this piece that Attorney General Merrick Garland is actually the top domestic violent extremist, because he is the one that is in favor of this. He is the one that is allowing this and wants this to continue to go on. People who simply trespassed into the Capitol or broke a window in solitary confinement up to 23 hours a day. This is what you call they're political prisoners, because there's nothing a leftist fears more than the threat to their power. And they see these people who really committed very minor crimes, they see these people as the greatest threat, because they see Trump supporters as their greatest threat. And ultimately, they see Donald J. Trump as a threat to their power. Here's a question that we should probably think about. When they say in their countering DMVEs, countering domestic violent, DVEs, domestic violent extremists or whatever, that those who promote conspiracy theories around the 2020 election leads to violence, and those people are the domestic terrorists we're worried about. Well, who has been the one who has been the most vocal about that very thing? Donald Trump. He is, I think, in their crosshairs more than anyone else. Yes, they care about us. Yes, they hate us. Yes, they want us neutralized. Whatever that looks like, and whatever way they got to do it, that's what they want. Now, thank God we live in the United States. States still have some power here. We have a federalist system. So it's not as bad as it could be, as if you're in a smaller country with just a strong central federal government and that's it. But they see Trump as the greatest threat to their power, and they see his supporters as essentially accomplices or his helpers in that. Even if all we do is vote for him. If you vote for him, you're voting for a white supremacist domestic terrorist, according to their own documents, according to the very things that they have said, whether it's in this document or in the media or anywhere else. So we have the intelligence apparatus against us. Now, that being said, I'm reminded of that scripture that said, it says, if God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his own son, but delivered him up for us all, how will he not also with him freely give us all things? So I don't want us to go to fear. I never want us to go to fear. I want us to go to awareness and to go to prayer and to go to action. And I want to encourage all of us to, even if you're like mine. I've got two Republican senators. I got a Republican congressman. I'm still going to write them about this, and I'm going to make sure that they are making their voices heard about it, because this really should be something that is being shouted from the rooftops constantly by our elected representatives, that this kind of great evil, this kind of communist lockup of political prisoners is happening here in the United States is completely unacceptable. Look, nobody's excusing what happened at the Capitol. Nobody's saying that they should have gone in and trespassed and broken the laws. Not by any means. In fact, one of the things you have to ask yourself, really, is who benefited from the January 6th breach of the U.S. Capitol? Did Trump benefit from that? Did Republicans benefit from that? Did the Republicans who were planning on contesting the election, did they benefit from that? Who benefited from the January 6th Capitol breach? The Democrats? Joe Biden? The CCP? Those who want to expand and enlarge the surveillance state? Yeah, they're the ones that benefited from it, not the Republicans. And as Tucker Carlson, I must admit, has very bravely been reporting, that it looks as if there were actually not only FBI agents in the crowd, but there were FBI agents that were actually trying to stir up the crowd to breach the Capitol. Similar things that happened with the kidnapping, the supposed plan to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan. The same type of things. That the FBI agents don't just infiltrate in order to try to stop bad things from happening. They'll actually infiltrate and stir up and try to make bad things happen, so that something like a Capitol breach will happen. And lo and behold, all this evidence of election fraud was about to be shared on the floor of the House of Representatives. And poof, just like that, gone. Poof, just like that, not able to be shared. You tell me, what did Nancy Pelosi know? Why do we not know who killed Ashley Babbitt, the unarmed veteran that trespassed into the Capitol, who was doing nothing violent, but who was violently and brutally executed? Why is that officer? Say her name. Why is that officer not being held accountable? There is some really, really shady stuff. We're going to be continuing to report it up at cgm.news, so stay tuned there. But I'm telling you, I've spent a lot of time on this, and I got to jump into our last story here. But this is something that should not and cannot go on in our nation's history. Contact your representatives and encourage them, implore them to make their voices heard on this, because this is the stuff of the worst regimes on earth. Confidential documents reveal Moderna sent mRNA coronavirus vaccine candidate to university researchers weeks before emergence of COVID-19. This is from dailyexpose.co.uk. A confidentiality agreement shows potential coronavirus vaccine candidates were transferred from Moderna to the University of North Carolina in 2019. 19 days prior to the emergence of the alleged COVID-19 causing virus in Wuhan, China. Wow, that's pretty good timing if you ask me, man. If you want to be first to market, already having the vaccine developed for this spontaneous pandemic is really, really helpful. I mean, you got to think about it. They made a really, really good guess. You got to hand it to the guys at Moderna. Really, respect where respect is due. The guesstimation on your end, I mean, somebody at Moderna deserves a raise. The confidentiality agreement, which can be viewed here, states that providers Moderna, alongside the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, agreed to transfer mRNA coronavirus vaccine candidates developed and jointly owned by NIAID and Moderna to recipients, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, on the 12th December 2019. The material transfer agreement was signed December 12th, 2019, by Ralph Barrick, Ph.D., at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and then signed by Jacqueline Quay, Director of Licensing and Innovation Support at the University of North Carolina, December 16th. The agreement was also signed by two representatives of the NIAID, one of whom was Amy F. Petrick, Ph.D., a technology transfer specialist, who signed the agreement on December 12, 2019 at 8:05 a.m. The other signatory was Barney Graham, M.D., Ph.D., an investigator for the NIAID. However, this signature was not dated. The final signatories on the agreement were Sunny Himansu, Moderna's investigator, and Sean Ryan, Moderna's deputy general counsel. Both signatures were made on December 17th. All of these signatures were made prior to any knowledge of the alleged emergence of the novel coronavirus. It wasn't until December 31st, 2019, that the World Health Organization became aware of an alleged cluster of viral pneumonia cases in Wuhan, China. But even at this point, they had not determined that an alleged new coronavirus was to blame, instead stating the pneumonia was of, quote, unknown cause. It was not until January 9th, 2020, that the WHO reported Chinese authorities had determined the outbreak was due to a novel coronavirus, which later became known as SARS-CoV-2, severe acute respiratory syndrome, with the alleged resultant disease dubbed COVID-19. So why was an mRNA coronavirus vaccine developed by Moderna being transferred to the University of North Carolina on December 12, 2019? Same Moderna that have had an mRNA coronavirus vaccine authorized for emergency use only in both the UK and US to allegedly combat COVID-19. What did Moderna know that we didn't? In 2019, there was not any singular coronavirus posing a threat to humanity which would warrant a vaccine. And evidence suggests there hasn't been a singular coronavirus posing a threat to humanity throughout 2020 and 2021 either. Considering the fact a faulty PCR test has been used at a high cycle rate, hospitals have been empty in comparison to previous years. Statistics show just 0.2% of those allegedly infected have died within 28 days of an alleged positive test result. The majority of those deaths, by a mile, have been people over the age of 85. And a mass of those deaths were caused by a drug called midazolam, which causes respiratory depression and respiratory arrest. Perhaps Moderna and the NIAID would like to explain themselves in a court of law. Maybe we need to bring back the term plandemic. This is incredible. This is world news. How in the world did Moderna have a spike mRNA thing that injects a spike protein into you? And the spike protein, as we're seeing, is causing heart inflammation, causing deaths, even in young people. So I don't know. We'll certainly be following that as it develops, but we shared a story up at CGM.news about a lady named Tammy Barajas. We're going to be putting stuff on CGM.news regarding deaths and injuries related to these shots. That's just what we're doing. And so if you want the latest of that on what's going on there, I encourage you to stay updated on that. And I'm not doing this because we're gluttons for punishment or I have some vendetta. My hope has always been that the COVID jabs would end up being safe, would end up not being a big deal. Maybe, you know, there would be some crazy conspiracy where it's all just actually saline and they're just injecting it into the population to make everybody feel better and make themselves look good. That's kind of what I was hoping would be the case, but that is not the case. And even the inventor of the mRNA vaccine himself, that technology, has come out against it. I actually just retweeted something from him up at CGM Radio News on that, him sharing a study. So, but there was a lady named Tammy Barajas who, I mean, literally her Twitter profile is, quote, "Aisle Treason Cleanup Crew." She's a hard leftist, but something very sad happened to this lady, and that is, and she posted about it. She's very pro-vax, very pro-COVID vaccines, but she posted this terrible story about her nephew 3 days after he got the second COVID shot, died. And here's what she said. She said, and so she actually ended up deleting the screenshot. So I have this, or deleting the tweet. So I have the screenshots actually up in a story at cgm.news. So you can see it there. But this is what she originally said. She said, "A week ago today, my brother's 13-year-old son had his second COVID shot." She posted this June 20th. "Less than 3 days later, he died." 13 years old. "The initial autopsy results done Friday were that his heart was enlarged and there was some fluid surrounding it. He had no known health problems, was on no medications." Guys, I wish I didn't have this story to share with you. It pisses me off as I talk about it. This isn't theater. I'm not acting. This is madness. "Our family is devastated. I struggled with putting this out on Twitter. I am pro-vaccine. We vaccinated my own 14-year-old as soon as it was available. I know it is mostly safe, but Jacob is dead now. The @CDC.gov needs to investigate this. There have been other cases of myocarditis in young men receiving their second Pfizer shot. Have others died from it in the U.S., or is my nephew the first?" No, Tammy, your nephew is not the first. "I think parents should be warned of the risk. I do believe that the vaccine is saving millions of lives. But should any innocent child be a sacrificial lamb in this endeavor? There are moral, ethical, and health questions that need to be answered. If Jacob had not received the second shot, we believe he would be alive today." And then I guess a little later she tweeted, "I got to my brother's house while the forensic team was still there. A police officer present told me a member of the team speculated that Jacob had a, quote, cardiac event." And she links over to a news story that, well, I can't find it in front of me right now. I know I had it around here. But I think it's up at cgm.news. But 7 boys ages 14 to 19 suffered from a very rare type of heart inflammation that looks like a heart attack. It's one that public health officials are beginning to link to COVID-19 deaths. And you know what's crazy about all of this? Is that the WHO, and I tweeted this earlier today, the WHO actually came out and said that more evidence is needed. And I'm quoting them directly. "More evidence is needed on the use of the different COVID-19 vaccines in children to be able to make general recommendations on vaccinating children against COVID-19. So even the CDC has come out and said, without saying, the kids don't really need the COVID shots. Now, to quote it in context, WHO's Strategic Advisory Group of Experts, SAGE, has concluded that the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine is suitable for use by people aged 12 years and above. So they do, in context, they do say that, but very generally and broadly, they really do say that more research and evidence is needed before injecting these kids. And that's the freaking WHO. This is bad. And then you've got this. This is the Cleveland Clinic study that comes out and says that there's no point vaccinating those who've had COVID-19. Now, there's so much I wanted to get to, but I'm out of time. But I've got to end on this. And it says that specifically of all infections during the study period, 99.3% occurred in participants who were not infected previously and remained unvaccinated. In contrast, only 0.7% of infections occurred in participants who were not previously infected but were currently vaccinated. But then it goes on to say this. Importantly, not a single incidence of SARS-CoV-2 infection was observed in previously infected participants with or without vaccination. In this study, which of 52,238 employees in the Cleveland Clinic, that's a lot of freaking employees, not a single incidence of coronavirus infection happened among participants who had previously had COVID, whether they were injected or whether they were not injected. Yeah, it's called immunity. It's called you already got the disease, so you have immunity from the disease. But when you have billion-dollar interests, trillion-dollar interests into all of these shots, and the only treatments you allow are these shots, or perhaps you allow remdesivir, which is highly expensive, and even though there are other studies that show that drugs like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and doctors who are out in the field treating patients, unlike Fauci, who's hanging out with the boys in D.C., are saying that these things work. We have protocols like the Zelensky protocol that work. It's nothing, ladies and gentlemen, it is nothing short of criminal. Nothing short of criminal of what is going on here. And let's just hope that over time, more and more and more, we will see the truth come out about this. What happened to this lady's nephew is unbelievably tragic and sad. Let's hope and pray more of that does not continue to happen. But unfortunately, it's looking like it will. All right, guys, that'll do it for today's episode of World News Brief. Make sure to check us out online, cgmradio.com/world. Email me, world@cgmradio.com. And for all the latest breaking news, make sure to continue to visit cgm.news. God bless. May his kingdom come. His will be done on earth as it is in heaven.